from HanselMinutes.com, it's Hansel Minutes, a weekly discussion with web developer and technologist Scott Hanselman, hosted by Carl Franklin. This is Lawrence Ryan announcing show number 125, recorded live Wednesday, August 6th, 2008. Support for Hansel Minutes is provided by Telerik, RAD Controls, the most comprehensive suite of components for Windows Forms and ASP.NET web applications. Online at www.telerik.com. Support is also provided by .NET Developers Journal, the world's leading .NET developer magazine. Online at www.sys-con.com. In this episode, Scott talks accessibility with developer Saqib Sheikh.
Hi, this is Scott Hanselman, and this is another episode of Hansel Minutes, and I'm here on the Microsoft campus in Redmond, Washington. I'm actually sitting down with Saqib Sheikh, a developer from Microsoft Consulting Services in the UK. So you've come all this way, and I just happen to be in Redmond. Thanks for taking the time to sit down with me.
Hi, thanks for allowing me to be here.
So we have a shared interest in accessibility, and you are blind. You're a blind developer.
Yes.
And you have a vested interest and also a professional interest in making accessible computing experiences.
Yeah, that's correct.
Do you focus mostly on websites, or do you focus on which client, or all things accessible?
All things. So applications. And though I don't do accessibility as part of my main job, it's obviously in my mind in everything I do, whether it's websites, WinForms, WPF, Silverlight.
Mm-hmm. Now, this might be kind of a remedial question for you, but I've spent a lot of time using screen readers and different applications for accessibility. But let's start at the beginning for people who may not know what is the experience for a blind developer working in Windows, whether it be on XP or Vista. How are you interacting with the machine?
Okay, so the traditional way is keyboard and mouse in, monitor out. So the first thing people don't realize is that you can't use the mouse. So from an input perspective, everything is done via the keyboard. And as a Windows developer, I'm sure you know that Visual Studio is just awesome for keyboard shortcuts.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of output, then, it's speech output. So there's a program in the background monitoring what's happening and verbalizing that in synthetic speech.
Mm-hmm. And is there one particular application that's like, I know there's a narrator that comes with Windows, but I assume that's quickly tossed aside?
Yes, very quickly. I use a program called JAWS. I should say this category of programs is called screen readers, and I use one called JAWS, which is quite popular.
Mm-hmm. Now, do applications have to target JAWS? Does Visual Studio as a Windows application have to do something to make it more accessible to JAWS, or does JAWS just extra clever?
JAWS is pretty clever. It hooks into the video chain and sees what's going to the monitor. But what applications can do, especially for custom controls, is what they call programmatic accessibility. So that's allowing another program to interrogate your UI and see what's there.
Oh, so how would I write an, I mean, what would I do to my application to make it more accessible, to let someone peek in and see what's happening?
So it's all about the semantics, adding meaning to your UI. Thinking beyond a 2D rectangle. In a website, you're going to do things like meaningful HTML markup. With Ajax, there's a standard called ARIA, which means you put some tags around your other HTML.
Mm-hmm.
In WPF and Silverlight, there's the system.windows.automation namespace. Lots of goodness in there.
Mm-hmm.
And with WinForms, it's MSAA, Microsoft Active Accessibility. So unfortunately, there's no one answer.
Ah, but it is about semantics. I just kind of started thinking to myself, do we want what is on the screen described? Really not. You don't really care what's going on the screen from a syntax perspective. Like, hey, look, he just put up a toolbox. That's not interesting to you.
So it's interesting that something appeared, and it is interesting that that thing is a toolbox, and how that's presented to the user is, can be presented in different ways.
Mm-hmm.
And the great thing about the programmatic accessibility is that it goes beyond just a screen reader and blindness. That's the same thing that the Windows Vista speech recognition uses.
Mm-hmm.
And, if you're a tester, it's what you would use for automated UI testing.
Oh, so the thing that JAWS is doing to interrogate an application is the exact same thing that someone who's doing automated UI testing would be using, the same hooks.
Yes. And that's why I think it's really great that in .NET 3 WPF, they're calling it UI automation, which doesn't directly mean anything to do with accessibility. It's just for any reason you'd have to automate a UI.
Really? So there's nothing specific to accessibility that's built into WPF. They just simply make everything automatable.
Exactly. So you write your classes for your custom controls to make them automatable. And yeah, that achieves accessibility, but that's not what they call it.
Now, interesting. By not calling it that, do you think it's an easier sell? Because in the,
I think so. I think it almost gets in through the back door. It's like, I think in the past, testers were a bit like, ooh, we have to use accessibility to test. Whereas this way, the hope is it'll get broader adoption.
Well, and there's that sense that adding accessibility, I mean, and just by the virtue of the fact that I use the word adding, it's this additional thing we have to do. It's not bad enough we have to do Firefox and IE and Opera. Now we have this other screen reader that, air quotes, nobody uses. And now we think of something like JAWS or a screen reader as being another target.
So you've definitely got to do your user testing. And that seemed like not something most developers are interested in. But I guess organizations do that. But as developers, yeah, it's just you're writing your classes, you're writing your C# or whatever code, and it's just writing a bit more. So every time you create a custom control, you write a bit more code to give it semantics.
So if I were going to write an application that brought up a table, JAWS is going to understand that I brought up a table of, let's say, stock prices.
Yes. So if you're using a standard data grid or whatever, a standard control, it will recognize that.
Uh-huh. And do you care as a vision impaired blind person about sorting and rearranging column headers and this kind of things?
Yeah, definitely.
Okay. So you're going to customize the UI as much as anybody for your tastes. Now, what about a chart? What does a chart or pie chart mean to you?
If it's got no semantics, it means nothing. But if you could represent the semantics, for example, if you're having a pie chart, which is a custom control, which contains child controls of slice, then if each slice had semantic information saying its label and its percent, then that's really useful.
Ah, okay. And then in WPF, I would add that bit of semantics.
I would
decorate those.
Unfortunately, you can't just do it as an attribute. There are these automation peer classes you have to write, but they're not that complicated. You implement various interfaces depending on the type of your what UI pattern it is.
And then, of course, the added benefit or the additional benefit is that now I can test my pie chart for semantics.
Yeah.
Interesting. Now, when creating a website, a lot of people have this, I think I call it checkbox accessibility, where the government has mandated that you must follow. And in the U.S., it's called Section 508.
Yes.
If you are in a large government organization or if you're a bank or whatever, your site must be accessible. It's the web equivalent of the wheelchair ramp.
Yeah.
Just as a wheelchair ramp might be something that a building owner might not embrace, oftentimes the boss of a website is not going to be thrilled about the idea that he has to support accessibility. How do we avoid that kind of attitude?
So I think you've got to target that at the different types of people. So I think your exec, your big decision maker, to him, really, the law mandating is a really good thing because it makes it into a fire on their desk, which really needs to be put out. And if it's not a fire, it's not going to get put out. But when you're talking to developers and so forth, yeah, there's the human part of accessibility, but there's also the idea that everyone is different. And, you might be a teenager wanting to send text messages without turning on the lights. You might be the businessman who's wants to notify his boss that he's going to be late while he's holding on to the rail in the train. Or, you could be hurt your back and, you're lying in bed and there's no computer you can use at the moment. So it's thinking of everyone is different and you can't predict what scenario different people are going to use your software in.
Well, and then also within each, within each disability, whether it be deafness or blindness or a physical disability, there are gradients.
Yes.
One is typically not 100% able-bodied or completely disabled, just as someone is not entirely blind.
Yes.
Now, would that mean that you would appreciate like a high contrast option? Or would a blind person appreciate really, really large fonts or flashes? Or what other kinds of things could one use?
So the semantics really takes care of people who run speech input or speech output or some agent interpreting the software for them.
Mm-hmm.
But you're right. There are things like not only using color for people who have color blindness and high contrast for people with partial sight,
mm-hmm.
which are equally important.
Dan, I've seen a lot of, I've used JAWS and I've, actually there's a really great organization in New York called the Associated Blind of New York that can provide QA, people who are of low sight to help you do this kind of stuff. And they taught me a lot about how things like JAWS work. But I haven't seen a lot of applications that sit in that middle place. I mean, there's flat, with regular Windows, the way Windows comes, on the one side of the spectrum. On the other side of the spectrum, there's JAWS, which is everything, you know, things are being read to you.
Mm-hmm.
Are there applications that will say, strobe the monitor when an email shows up? You know, would that be a useful thing to someone who can see shapes and colors?
I'm not sure, but the type of thing you do get is everything ranging from someone who's just got, you know, maybe getting elderly and just wants to point the mouse at things and has a little square which magnifies, all the way through to somebody who has a full screen magnifier which magnifies the entire screen up to 32 times and can replace any color on the screen with any other color of their choice, and all crazy stuff like that. And you know, track the mouse and the keyboard and really amazing stuff.
Now, how often do you get stuck? I'm curious. How often do you find yourself in a situation where you just have to basically start Alt-F4-ing?
More than I'd like. but certainly that does happen a few times a day just because something's not accessible or JAWS is obviously doing a lot of low-level manipulation, so sometimes things go wrong there.
And what is that like? And I'm not asking the question very right, but I'm trying to understand, are these state machine issues where maybe you got caught in a series of pop-ups? Like just today, I've had LASIK eye surgery, so even though I was had very poor vision growing up, I can see fine now. I got caught in some kind of a thing where we had 48 pop-ups and Internet Explorer went absolutely bonkers, and I was basically Alt-F4-ing Windows as fast as they could come. What happens when that happens to you? Surely you've been caught in a pop-up trap.
Definitely. And not so much pop-ups, but generally when things get out of control, you know, you can minimize everything with your Windows M key and then Alt-Tab through what's there. Or sometimes you just go to the task manager and kill iExplore.
Yeah. So you do the same thing.
Yes.
You just blow, you know, so the idea of going to task man and figuring out who's taking up the most CPU and just blowing them away is a common thing. It's a universal.
Yes.
So that's an interesting question. How can you walk me through what that is like? I know that I right-click on the clock, I hit Task Manager, I find the header for CPU and sort.
So there are always a million ways to do things. For example, running taskman.exe or pressing Control-Shift-Escape will take you straight to the Task Manager.
It will?
Yes.
Control-Shift-Escape. See, yes. I knew you would know all the hotkeys.
Yes, you know, many years of learning all this. And then from there, it's a list. So within a list, you can use your first letter navigation to jump to a particular thing and all the shortcut keys to end task, etc.
How do you tell it's the one using the most CPU? Because TaskMan moves underneath you. You know, it's always updating itself.
So in Vista, they actually now give the column headers tab focus. So you can tab to the headers and left and right between headers and press spacebar.
Really?
Yes.
That must have been a good thing. I didn't know that.
Before that, JAWS has a virtual mouse and you had to use the virtual mouse to virtually left-click on the header.
Really?
Yeah, which is only 3-4 keystrokes, but
it adds up.
Yeah.
And you can tab around, and JAWS is telling you that you're on a column header.
Exactly, yeah.
You hit space, you do your sorting, ascending or descending, and then you blow it away with Alt-E, Enter.
Exactly.
Interesting. I've got an application right now I've been writing called Baby Smash.
Yes, I've been reading about that.
Have you tried running Baby Smash? Probably JAWS would not like it, I don't think.
I must confess, I haven't actually run it because
it takes over your system, you know.
Yes.
All your hotkeys. And I was trying to think what a low-vision baby would do with something like that. I think if it laughs and it giggles and it'll say the letter that you press on.
It's not something obviously I know much of, but I think it would be great because I have a friend who had a blind baby, and his favorite thing was to sit a foot from the TV and watch the snooker because of the really bright colored balls. So,
oh, really?
From what I've read about Baby Smash,
Yeah, that's nice. Very interesting. I could make a low vision version of Baby Spencer because it's in WPF, though. Yeah, I could do a number of things. That's very interesting.
Yeah, just lots of bright colors.
Now, a lot of times people run applications that will basically sniff your website and tell you whether or not it's accessible or not. Mm-hmm. How valuable are those kind of analyzers?
I think they're really valuable as long as you realize they won't get you all the way there. So maybe they'll get you 60, 70%, those are my numbers I'm making up, mm-hmm. of the way there, because certain things like not have, the biggest problem with websites is people don't put their alt text and meaningful alt text on their images.
Mm. You know. I'm guilty of that on my, yes. on my blog.
But yeah, 10 years, 15 years on, that's still the biggest problem. Mm-hmm. And an analyzer can be really good at that. But then there's always the human factor. Mm-hmm. Just taking something as an alt text, if you were to automatically say put something everywhere, mm-hmm. then you end up with, you know, the spacer dot gifs everyone has.
Oh yeah, I love you that.
Know, people will sometimes put the word spacer there, and there's nothing more annoying. That's I'll leave the site if they do that.
Really?
Yes.
If suddenly the JAWS starts saying spacer, spacer,
yes, for
spacer.
Every single spacer, and then yeah, so sometimes you should have empty alt text, and sometimes the alt text. How descriptive should it be? Mm-hmm. So yeah, the automated will get you so far, but humans always go the rest of the way.
How often does something that someone implemented on a website in order to make it really pretty or really accessible from a visual perspective kind of cause you problems? And the example that I'm thinking of is that for many years I was using a tool that would syntax highlight code samples and basically just litter the code samples with tags.
So that's... It depends how it's done. I was actually talking to Scott Gill about this.
Oh, yeah? Because he does. He uses code samples as images.
Exactly.
Which is a horrible idea.
Because I talked to him about this, and, you know, people were complaining that it wasn't indented properly and all the rest when it was just done as HTML. So he went to images, which is a really good solution, except I couldn't read any of his tutorials. You know, we had a really good laugh over that. And...
That sounds like kind of a sad laugh, though. I mean, do you think he'll change?
Oh, he definitely said that he's just going to... The solution is now he's providing links to the actual source code.
Oh, okay.
So inline, it'll still be images, mm-hmm. but there'll be links to, yeah, source files.
Now, I found a really... So the solution that I came up with, because I didn't like my markup being littered, is now I just have a pre-tag. I just put uh-huh. the code straight in the pre-tag. I close the pre, but then I have a JavaScript... utility afterwards that looks for all the pre-tags and then basically has a little engine on the client side that will syntax highlight.
That's really clever.
Well, what is JAWS? Does JAWS care when JavaScript starts running around and manipulating the DOM like that?
Not really. It has problems with it updating the DOM underneath it, mm-hmm. but there's this phenomenon called behavioral JavaScript, which is like what you said, mm-hmm. to put class attributes mm-hmm. on things. And then after the fact, in your onload, the JavaScript goes and injects things into the DOM.
That's exactly what I'm doing. So I have pre, and then I'll say name equals code, mm-hmm. class equals C#.
Exactly, yes. And then that's exactly the whole behavioral JavaScript thing. Mm-hmm. So that would work perfectly with JAWS.
And does that, I mean, if you, I don't know if you read my blog or not, but if you noticed, have you had any trouble reading my code samples?
No, not at all.
Okay, good. Now I feel better. But I'm you're silent. You've kept it to yourself that my alt tags are shoddy at best. So I will fix that.
Yes, I think in Daz blog, in the RSS feeds, it has these really weird images at the bottom of every.
Oh, okay, yeah. So those really weird images are actually one pixel GIFs. I'm sorry.
Okay.
and what there are is they're aggregator bugs. Basically, when you hit an item, uh-huh. DOSBlog phones home to let me know that someone read it.
Ah, so they should have an alt equals quotes quotes empty string.
Ah.
Because then it'll just be ignored because, yeah.
So one time I visited CNN while I was doing some studying of accessibility, and I did a view source, and I noticed that they had a tiny anchor tag that I had never seen before that said, skip to main content.
Yes.
What is this about?
So, that's... some people get fanatical about this. I don't use it. It's so that you can just press enter on that, and it'll skip you past all the navigation bar, because something like JAWS is going to treat your web page serially. You'll go through...
So it linearizes the entire page.
Exactly, especially today because everyone's using tables. Mm-hmm. And if your first, you know, if you have a left cell and a right cell, mm-hmm. then the left cell will be read first.
Ah, okay. So then you show up on a CNN.com site and the very first thing that has focus is this skip to main content. You just hit spacebar, enter, and then you've moved on beyond all the ads. And
yeah, exactly.
Interesting.
HTML5, I think, will actually have a sidebar tag, so that goes back to making it a semantic thing.
Now, that's an interesting point that you're bringing up, because of HTML5. You've been surfing the web for many years, and you've been doing it, I assume, all this time as a blind individual.
Yes.
Have you noticed, or do you have a sense, not just in JAWS and screen reader technology improving, but is HTML getting better and easier for you to understand, going from a table-based layout with one-pixel GIFs to the semantic web, the whole CSS Zen Garden style of development with divs?
I don't know, and I don't think so. The one thing to bear in mind is JAWS you could consider as a user agent in its own right. It's going through Internet Explorer or Firefox, but it's interpreting the DOM itself. So as the web has changed, so JAWS has changed to do the best it can to make it a good experience. And your CSS Zen Garden, that is, you know, the utopia, the ultimate where web accessibility should be, but no one does that.
So that brings up an interesting question. You know, I've been playing with this iPhone lately.
Okay.
And, you know, the iPhone is a little mini Safari, so it's a full browser. But DOSBlog and my blog have the ability to sniff a user agent and apply an alternate style sheet, basically. And not just a style sheet, but a complete template. The reason I say that is that when I first started playing with the iPhone, I said, you know, I'll sniff the iPhone and I'll return the mobile version of my site.
Okay.
That means no navigation, no sidebar, just content, content, content. Would that be the kind of thing that would be appropriate or inappropriate? Should I detect a JAWS screen reader and call that a mobile site and give you the tiny version of my site?
So, from my point of view, that would be great. However, I was actually talking to some of the accessibility people, and because of privacy concerns, they don't pass that information along.
So there's no way for me to tell you visited my site?
No.
Because I could tell you were blind, and then I would discriminate against you by giving you lousy content.
So, you know, from a developer's point of view, it would, you know, folks could easily say, oh, someone is using the automation APIs, let's put a HTTP header in.
Ah.
But that's a whole privacy issue.
Yeah, I never thought about that. I mean, the idea that it would be a privacy issue, I guess it would. I mean, that might be, I could understand that that might be an aspect of your personality that you're just not interested in sharing.
But also, I think if you're going to an insurance site to do your online sign up, and if someone can tell that you're a disabled person wanting insurance, you know.
I mean, there's no deaf people user agent. I don't suppose there ought to be a blind person user agent, right?
No, there would be speech recognition potentially, but not really a user agent.
But the idea that, you know, we have these senses, and some of us have five and some have four.
Yeah.
does that mean that we all get our own user agent? Of course not. I mean, I can see the argument against that. But at the
same
time,
I would love everyone to have so, because...
Really?
I know. I have this crazy idea, which isn't happening anytime soon, that if you have, if all your UIs are semantic, then why not have customized user interfaces for whatever anyone understands, likes, prefers?
Yeah. I mean, I would like to provide the best experience possible.
Yes.
And I've got this ability to sniff a browser. You know, if you visit my site on a BlackBerry, you get the tiny version. And I think that that version would be so much easier for a JAWS screen reader to view.
Yes, I think it definitely would.
I think what I'll do is I'll just make it available as a clicking option at the bottom, and I'll set a cookie. And if, you know, if somebody hits the site and they want to stay in the mobile version, then they can do that.
That's cool. And I think in the past, having a text-only version for blind people was frowned upon. But these days, when everything's coming from the same database, there's nothing too wrong about it.
Well, yeah, I think with the advent of skinning and theming, I think that the first example that people recognized that not everyone wants to read your 8-point Verdana tiny, tiny font was the, you know, the advent of those little A- A+ buttons that sit at the top of a page. I don't know if you've seen these or not, but this is the make the font bigger with JavaScript or make the font smaller with JavaScript.
Yes.
And, you know, my parents love that.
Cool.
My dad uses that. Why shouldn't there be a, you know, click if you don't want to see any of this other stuff? Although someone might want to use that to remove ads, of course. I guess that means that blind people are impervious to ads.
I guess so. So I get the whole bit of frame begin and frame end for the iframes, but I don't ever get to read the ads. So I get almost the worst of both worlds.
So you know, it doesn't dig into the iframe and you don't get to see all this flash ad garbage that we're seeing?
I'm not sure. With Google Ads, I don't think.
Really? You're not
seeing
the Google
Ads? I get
told
that there's a Google ad
there,
but I never find the text from the ads.
Well, we could be trying to sell you something very important that you're missing out on.
This is true.
Yeah, you know, actually, all my advertisers have had me put alt tags on the ad, so you're probably catching those.
Okay.
Interesting. So is it possible, though, to have a really pretty website that doesn't scrimp on the pretty, on the Web 2.0 and the RIA and still be really accessible?
Absolutely. I'm really passionate that I want to be using the same things, the same really lovely user experiences that everyone else uses, because that is what the mainstream Web 2.0 world is. So as an example demo, I made a world map, which was an atlas totally in Silverlight, and you could hover the mouse over the different regions and it would show you a flag fluttering in the wind and information about that country. And that was all made accessible and keyboard accessible. And actually, to a blind person, all you'd see is a list box of countries, and you might never know that it's a pretty map, but it's the same thing that anyone else would appreciate.
Ah, and you'll give us a link to that, and I'll post that on the
Definitely, on the
site. Now, if you don't mind my asking, how exactly did you get it started? How did you get started in computers?
It's a funny story. So I lost my sight when I was 7, and at that point, they decided I was going to spend a year learning Braille and getting up to speed with being blind, and on top of that, because I had some time left over, they told me to type. And I guess I tried all these creative endeavors like drawing and woodwork, but that meant the teacher had to be there. This is all, you know, when I was about 10, 11.
Mm-hmm.
And I eventually got to writing stories. I really liked making things which other people could read.
Mm-hmm.
It meant a lot to me then. And yeah, that led to programming when I was about 13, and it all started from there.
It's really about creation. I mean, you wanted to produce things that other people could interact with.
Yes, that's really how I started, and still, it's that, I think, like many of us developers, it's the creative process and making new stuff, which is really cool.
You think accessibility is getting better? It sounds like you're pretty positive in your thinking that it's just getting more and more accessible.
I'm not sure things are getting more and more accessible, but definitely there's a lot more awareness, and
mm-hmm.
going back to where we started, the laws do help with that. But also, I think the world is changing. You have RSS feeds, which give you data in XML.
Mm-hmm.
You have a lot more awareness of multimodal user interfaces. Like, people are suddenly saying, oh, we need a keyboard interface and a touch interface. So to tell them that why not have a voice input and a voice output as two more interfaces, you know, I think technology is helping us to, you know, open people's eyes, pun intended, to the different options and alternatives.
Cool. Well, thanks so much for sitting down with me today. And this has been another episode of Hansel Minutes, and I'll see you again next week.